Well, regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Brian Strauser of the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus here in just a moment or two about a couple of things. Obviously, after the shooting in Minneapolis at the Annunciation Church, there are all kinds of calls for gun control. Governor Tim Walz has said he's calling a special session. We haven't actually seen that special session scheduled. He's said he's going to be releasing his comprehensive gun violence prevention plan. Haven't seen that either. But gun control, very much one of the primary topics at the State House and certainly on the op-ed pages of Minnesota papers. But the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus also noted yesterday, and we covered this at Bearing Arms, the Minnesota Department of Public Safety has a new red flag coordinator, basically somebody who's, going to be working with, prosecutors, police around the state to talk about using and to promote the use of Minnesota's red flag law. The problem, generally, we've got a problem with red flag laws, right? But specifically, the problem here is that the person that the DPS has hired is a very committed anti-gun activist with a track record of hostility towards those who support and defend our right to keep and bear arms. So we'll talk about that with Brian Strauser here in just a second. Before we do, though, I want to take a moment to tell you about something that I'm really excited about. It's called Freedom Chat. It's a next-generation messaging app that's designed for people who still believe that privacy matters. The team just launched their alpha version. It's available today on both Android and iPhone, and you should download it right now. Unlike the so-called free apps that spy on you and sell your data, Freedom Chat was built with your privacy first. Your messages are end-to-end encrypted. They're not stored on servers. Even screenshots are blocked. So there's no tracking. There's no mining. There's no listening in. It's just private communication the way it should be. And here's something that I really like. Freedom Chat has no ties to big tech. It's built by people you can trust, and it's a fantastic service. They've even partnered with Rumble Cloud to ensure independence. In fact, I've created my own private channel inside Freedom Chat. You can find it at Bearing Arms Cam and Company, and you can subscribe to it. I'll be sharing some posts, content you won't find anywhere else. And the best part is that with Freedom Chat, no one can see what channels you follow or what posts you react to. It's your own secure, curated feed. Not that you should be ashamed of subscribing to Bearing Arms Cam and Company, but just in case you don't want anybody to know, nobody has to. So if you're ready for a messenger that actually reflects your values and keeps your conversations private, head over to freedomchat.com. Download it today. It's freedomchat.com, where freedom still means something. All right, now let's get to our conversation with another individual who values freedom, Brian Strauser from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. Take a look and a listen. Brian, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again, my friend.
Hey, Cam, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, listen, I saw the tweets or the posts on X from Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus about the hiring of Rachel Joseph. Saw your video talking about this. I mean, I was gobsmacked. This really is just this is just one of those what the heck are you thinking moments here, right? You've got a not just a gun control activist, but one who is very extreme in her points of view, particularly towards folks like yourself, right? She's repeatedly called you a child murder advocate.
Yes.
Because you are standing up for the right to keep and bear arms. So supporting the Second Amendment makes you an advocate for child murder, according to Rachel Joseph. And yet this is the woman who's now in charge of coordinating red flag orders with the Minnesota Department of Public Safety.
That's right. She's the state's new, I would call her the red flag gun confiscation coordinator, but the state, of course, calls it the extreme risk protective order coordinator. But yeah, she's in a major policy and educational position to help raise awareness among law enforcement and county attorneys about Minnesota's red flag law. But she comes at this from the aspect of being too extreme, even for Everytown and Moms Demand Action and Protect Minnesota, the state's anti-gun group here in Minnesota.
So why was she too extreme for them? Because they're pretty extreme on their own.
Because she went after gun rights proponents like Rob Dorr and I personally, and particularly me. She really had something out for me for some reason. But she was very much engaged in behavior that led those organizations apparently to part ways with her as an employee and as a volunteer at different points.
Interesting. You know, and as you guys documented in your post, by the way, she has scrubbed her social media accounts clean. Like, there were a couple of links to some Medium posts that she had written. They're down now. Thankfully, a piece that she wrote, I think this was back in 2020 or 2021 for the Minnesota Reformer. That's a third party website. So that's still up. Yep. I thought it was really interesting that, you know, she's talking just a couple of years ago. Maybe this is 2022. She's talking just a couple of years ago about how gun control activists should not work with the police. Police are not the answer. Police just introduced more guns into the equation. And now
she's working for the police.
Yeah. So I guess it's okay as long as you're specifically focused on confiscating firearms, right? Then it's okay to work with law enforcement.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if it helps her meet her end through the use of force by government, then that's totally cool with her. But otherwise, police are racist and violent and you should never work with them, according to her writings.
So the caucus has sent this letter to the DPS commissioner, Bob Jacobson, asking that, what exactly are you asking for, Brian?
We're asking for her to be removed from her position, that she is completely unfit to hold this role. And, you know, if they're going to have this position, then let's have a qualified professional in the role that's going to approach this with the right level of impartiality, fairness, and respect for constitutional rights. That's not Rachel Joseph.
Clearly. Yeah, I mean, this is somebody who you would expect, based on everything that she has said and done in the past, to advocate for a very liberal use of these extreme risk protection orders, right? Filing them whenever possible, hoping for the judge to rubber stamp these orders. It sounds like Rachel Joseph doesn't believe that you or I, or anybody else, frankly, should own a gun regardless of our mental state. So you have to believe that she's going to treat Minnesota's red flag law as an opportunity to disarm as many people as possible for as long as possible.
Well, I think in one of the Medium article or Medium posts, I guess, I don't know what the right term is. One of the articles she had written, she commented that, like, safe storage and, you know, background checks and red flags were not enough, that we needed more extreme gun control. And she talked about in various writings about liability insurance and licensing and psychological screening and assault weapons bans and et cetera, et cetera. So we know where she stands on this issue. It's as far as she can go until the courts tell her to stop.
Yeah. Have you heard anything back from the DPS yet?
No.
Okay.
No. And we've, our members and supporters have sent several hundred messages to the commissioner.
Yeah.
And we still haven't heard anything back. I think our letter arrived Friday last week, and we sent our call to action yesterday.
Okay. And it sounds like members are responding.
Oh, yeah. They're not thrilled about this one at all.
Well, I mean, nor should they be. I'm curious, has there been any other media interest in this? Because to me, you know, obviously I'm interested in this from a Second Amendment perspective, but even just from a local government, good government perspective, this is a juicy news story for the Minnesota media.
Yes. We've gotten one media inquiry about this. In the media's defense, there's a lot of other things going on here in Minnesota right now on the gun control front. But we haven't had any, we've had one inquiry about this from a local media outlet.
Okay. Well, hopefully that will continue to grow. But as you mentioned, there obviously is a lot of other stuff to talk about in Minnesota right now regarding gun control after the shooting at the Annunciation Church. Mm-hmm. Governor Walz's call for a special session. Now, one has not actually been set yet. Correct, Brian?
Correct. He has not called. Two things haven't happened. The governor said last week he was going to immediately call a special session. He has not. The governor also said he was going to release his comprehensive gun control package last week, and that has also not happened. What we have heard is that there's not unanimity within the Minnesota DFL about proceeding with this. And his own Senate Judiciary Chair has said that we shouldn't have a special session, that we should study the issue and then deal with this in the upcoming regular session in 2026.
Interesting. So what, how is the caucus responding to this? Are you kind of waiting to see what happens here? Or are you starting to be proactive in terms of reaching out to lawmakers?
No, we've started reaching out to lawmakers as soon as the gun control push started. So there are a couple seats open because of the death of former Speaker Hortman. That special election is next week. And then in the Senate, we had a Republican legislator pass away, just natural causes, and a Democrat senator resigned because she got convicted of first degree burglary. So we have some special elections happening in November. But we have started to reach out to lawmakers. We've had our members and supporters emailing the governor, their representatives and their senators. And there's just not appetite for this from the rural DFLers or any Republicans that we've seen so far.
Well, that is good to hear. You know, I know that there is, when you see a tragedy like this, right, there is that impulse, particularly among lawmakers, to do something, right? They want to show the public that they're acting, that they're taking mm-hmm. some sort of steps to prevent this from happening again. But when you look at the specifics of this case, this was somebody who, while clearly disturbed, had pretty much kept that to themselves, right? I mean, there was no indication through, you know, criminal history. There was no adjudication of mental illness. The individual, I think one of the gun store owners where the individual bought these firearms said there were no, you know, red flags that were raised.
He was acting normal,
you know, chatty, personable. So I guess the question then becomes, you know, what is Governor Walz, for instance, what does he think the solution is? Is this going to be a hardware ban? This is an individual who had a rifle, a pistol, a shotgun. Are we going to target the rifle and leave the shotguns and pistols alone? I mean, I'm trying to figure out where, you know, obviously I don't think any gun control law would have prevented this, but I'm trying to figure out where the gun control activists are going to try to place their bets here in terms of a policy response.
They're going all in on a ban on semi-automatic rifles and magazines over 10 rounds, or at least we think that's what the limit's going to be that they're going to try to push for. This is in line with previous efforts Governor Walz had that didn't go anywhere, and other bills the Democrats have filed over the last couple of legislative sessions that didn't even get a hearing. I mean, even when they had complete control of Minnesota government in the 2023 to 2024 session, they held both houses and the governor's mansion, the governor's office. They didn't bring any of these kind of bills up for a hearing. There simply wasn't support for it. They couldn't even get safe storage and mandatory loss and stolen reporting of firearms through. But now they think they have their momentum, so they've been all in on this. But it came to a screeching halt when the Republican House said, and they have control, no, we're not going to support any of this. And they released their own mental health, school safety, and public safety package with no gun control. Now, the speaker is meeting with the governor today. I don't expect that to change anything, mm-hmm. but certainly there'll be some negotiations around what the parameters of a special session might be. But I don't think the governor is going to get what he wants as long as we have Republicans and rural DFLers that hold the line.
You know, obviously, you know, I want to talk about those rural DFLers for a second, because, you know, we expect, rightly or wrongly, we expect that Republicans are going to stand up for our Second Amendment rights. Generally speaking, you look at North Carolina, that's not the case when it comes to like things like permitless carry. You got a couple of recalcitrant Republicans. So, you know, I would caution people, don't take that support for granted. But, you know, those rural DFLers, I know this is something that you and I have talked about. Rob Doerr and I have talked about in the past. There has obviously been that erosion of support for the Second Amendment among rural DFL members of the legislature. But there are still enough, you think, in the legislature who are either listening to their constituents, they are worried about their own reelection prospects, that that they're not going to go all in on a gun ban, something that they would see as maybe more moderate. They'll sign on to, like, you know, a ban on binary triggers or something like that, but not a semi-auto ban.
Yeah. So, I mean, part of this, I think, is just how the state has realigned itself politically. In the House, there are really no rural DFLers, no rural Democrats left. They're all in the urban core of the Twin Cities, Duluth and Rochester, and a few of the exurbs. In the Senate, there's still two rural DFL senators left. Both are up or near the Iron Range up in northern Minnesota, and they're pretty vulnerable on the gun issue. They had no issue voting for background checks and red flags and banning binary triggers and banning bump stocks. But they wouldn't vote for safe storage or mandatory loss and stolen reporting. And the pro-gun control element in the Senate, Democrats have come out and said that they don't have the votes over the weekend. And you can blame the purple senators for not having the votes, and kind of left it at that. I think as long as we keep pressure on them, I don't think they'll cross the line and support some hardware bans. But it's possible they could go for something else as a compromise.
And we've also seen, I saw a mayor of, I can't remember what town it was. I think it was one of the better communities there of Minneapolis, St. Paul, saying that this should go to a vote of the people. There should be some sort of ballot measure to change the Constitution to ban, I guess, semi-automatic firearms, semi-automatic long guns, maybe. I don't know what his language would be, but he says, take it out of the legislature's hands, take it to a vote of the people. How concerned are you about that?
Well, we don't have ballot initiatives in Minnesota, so I'm not super concerned about that. The only thing that goes on the ballot here is a constitutional amendment to the state constitution, which would require the legislature to pass it. And again, they don't have the votes in the legislature. So I guess they could try something like that, but they're going to have to get it through the legislature. And it's still, if it violates the Second Amendment, we still have a federal grounds for, you know, litigation on that issue.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like one of the preferred avenues of choice to pass gun control is also off the table, thanks to the efforts of the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, because that omnibus bill that included gun control language. You guys recently had a court victory, right, where a judge said this violates Minnesota's single subject rule. What's the latest on that case?
Yeah. So the issue here is that in the last 20 minutes of the 2024 legislative session, the Democrats crammed everything into one 1,600-page bill that was supposed to be a tax bill and passed it. They did it by basically refusing to recognizing any Republican on the floor, calling the question and then passing, and then did the same in the Senate. If there's video of this, it was pretty ugly. We were able to get a Ramsey County judge to overturn the binary trigger ban portion of the bill, claiming it violated the single subject rule and that he wished he could strike the whole bill down, basically. So we're waiting to see if the state will appeal. If the state appeals, then we'll have to go through the appellate process to the Minnesota Court of Appeals and to the Minnesota Supreme Court. Case law is not necessarily in our favor, but this is a pretty egregious violation. That's how we were able to win the lower court case. So we'll find out. The state has 60 days.
Okay.
From what the towards the end of July to do that. So okay. Time's a ticking.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And again, no shortage of things to keep you guys busy there in Minnesota. If you can, Brian, I mean, what are you seeing from members? Are you getting new members right now? I mean, obviously, you know, every time there's this concerted effort to infringe on our right to keep bear arms in the back of a tragedy, that does, I think, raise awareness of the threat, right? Are Minnesota gun owners responding? Are they recognizing that, okay, people are trying to, you know, use these victims here to take away my rights?
Over the last few days, or over the last 10 days or so since we started running a campaign against this, we've been signing up folks at several hundred per day. So I would say Minnesotans are responding pretty strongly. Part of this was just making the case to hunters and others that they're not just talking about, some fully automatic AR-15 mystery gun, that what they're talking about here is the deer rifle that you're using, the competitive rifle you're using, the rifle your kid learned to shoot with. These are all things that are at play with what the governor has verbally said he wants to do. And I think just raising awareness as to what's really at stake here has really motivated Minnesotans to come out in opposition to this.
You know, I want to ask you, either from the perspective of heading up the caucus or just even your own personal perspective, when you look at, again, there's that impetus to respond, right, to do something in the face of a horrific act like this. Where do you think lawmakers should be turning their attention? If it's not banning AR-15s, if it's not banning semi-automatic firearms, what do you think they should be doing?
I mean, Rob Dorf from our team had a really good op-ed in the Minnesota Star Tribune a few days after the Annunciation shooting, where he pointed out that assault weapons bans don't work and why. And not just the political reality of the votes aren't there, but there's a number of things where we have common ground and could probably find unanimous votes around doing certain things. And those all revolve around increased access to mental health care in the state. We have a bed shortage. We have an availability shortage for counselors and for physicians that specialize in this space. Improving school safety. The Republicans had a number of bills around improving school resource officer funding and capabilities and security assessments and security measures at schools. None of that passed, even though some of these were voted unanimously out of committee in the Minnesota House. It didn't make it into the final budget deals. So there's plenty of ground to cover there that I think would have a difference. Most, if you get out of the, if you set aside the, you know, the single tragedy of Annunciation, you look at the broader set of data, most firearm-related deaths in Minnesota are suicides, and most, 75%, and most of those suicides are in rural Minnesota, where we have the least amount of availability of healthcare or of mental health resources. So that's a great area. If you want to truly have an impact on firearm-related death in Minnesota, that's a place we can have impact, have immediate impact by getting more availability of resources.
Absolutely. You know, and I would say, too, I mean, you know, that is something that I've been hammering because this is a problem in every state, right? Every state of the country has a shortage of mental health care workers. You've got a shortage of inpatient beds. And oftentimes, I mean, look, let's be honest, this is one of the reasons why lawmakers like red flag laws, right? Because it's a cheap and easy fix, quote unquote. You don't have to worry about building new hospitals. You don't have to worry about hiring new doctors or new counselors, right? You just have a judge declare someone can't own a gun. You tell the police to go get the gun, and then problem solved, even though it's not really solved.
Right.
So, you know, but one of the other aspects of this that I hope will get addressed is, you know, like voluntary offsite storage, which is not a substitute for improving mental health access. But, you know, when somebody is in crisis or they've got a family member in crisis, having that local FFL there who will say, hey, you know what, you need some place to store your guns for a couple of weeks or a month, I'm here for you. I think that can be a critically important resource for individuals, particularly, again, in rural areas where that mental health care just isn't there. But maybe there is a local gun store that could provide that that safe harbor for, you know, a little bit while that individual's in crisis.
There has been an effort around that here in Minnesota, fully on a voluntary basis without any legislation around it, to provide a map of places where you could take your firearms to be stored and you can retrieve them when you're ready. So I do believe that effort launched and is out there. I'm just not as familiar with it.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, Brian, again, I appreciate you carving out a couple of minutes of what I'm sure is a very busy day. I always appreciate getting a chance to talk with you. And, you know, again, I'm a big fan of the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. You, Rob Doerr, the rest of the team there. And in fact, you've got a couple of openings I see at the caucus right now.
Yeah, we're looking for a new director. Well, not new. We have a new position for a director of government relations and advocacy to be part of our lobbying team at the state capitol and throughout greater Minnesota. And we're hiring a manager for engagement and operations to help provide better support to our members.
So there you go. I would encourage folks to become a member, even if you're not a Minnesota resident, become a member of the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. And who knows, if you are a local, because I imagine these are not remote positions, but if you are a local, maybe you could actually become a part of the caucus itself.
Brian, some members apply, so that's been cool to see.
Oh, awesome. Excellent. Yeah. Well, listen, man, I really appreciate your time, and I look forward to doing this again very soon. Please keep up the fantastic work and the great activism, and again, we'll do this again very soon.
Thanks for having me on, Cam. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Brian. My thanks to Brian for joining us on the program, and again, the caucus really does just do fantastic work. There are a lot of great state-level organizations out there. Obviously, I'm a big fan of, you know, groups like the Gun Owners Action League in Massachusetts, but the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus really does punch above its weight, so I would encourage you to support them however you can. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen Story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Chicago from the website CWB Chicago. Man stole ambulance, got released, and then robbed a store 6 hours later. Yeah, how about that? What's even worse is prosecutors say he was already on probation for robbing another store in the same neighborhood. How about that? Tim Heckey with the CWB Chicago reporting that according to police and court filings, this started back on August 21st when an ambulance crew was picking up a patient. Crew left the vehicle running, keys in the ignition, and when they got back with the patient, the ambulance was gone. The ambulance has an onboard video system, so they were able to see the guy driving around. Police were able to track the ambulance through GPS pings. They found it parked in the 6300 block of North Sheridan. That's where officers arrested 50-year-old Brandon Burt, who was allegedly in the driver's seat. After being advised of his rights, Heckey reports that police say Burt admitted he said, quote, "I drove an ambulance. I drove it to my mom's." According to Heckey, though, despite the seriousness of the allegation, police could only charge him with misdemeanor trespassing. because the ambulance service did not have the surveillance footage, quote, readily available for the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. So they charged him with civil trespassing, misdemeanor trespassing. He was in custody for 21 hours, was released at 6.09 p.m. on August 22nd from the Rogers Park District Station. 6.09 p.m. At approximately 11.50 that evening, Bird allegedly entered a store, walked behind the counter, grabbed about $800 in cash. 50-year-old clerk tried to intervene, but prosecutors say Bert punched him in the head and face, knocking him unconscious. Victim regained consciousness and tried again to stop Bert with a large stick, but Bert managed to escape. The next afternoon, the clerk spotted Bert once again outside the store, called 911. Police arrested him again. As Hecky writes, in court, prosecutors noted that Bert is currently serving probation for a 2022 robbery of a store. A judge in Cook County granted the state's detention petition, meaning that Bird will be held in custody pending trial on the new robbery charge. We don't know what, if any, prison time Bird received for the 2022 robbery, but given that he is already on probation, does not appear to have been long at all. On to today's Armed Citizen story from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. I don't have a lot of information here. I got to say, I'm a little bothered by this headline. 17-year-old shot by rideshare driver during dispute in Winston-Salem. Police determined that the shooting appeared to be an act of self-defense and no charges will be filed at this time. Dispute, I think, undersells what actually happened here. So as WFMY reports, police responded around 1:45 Sunday afternoon to an incident in the 4900 block of Doris Street. That's where they found this 17-year-old with a gunshot wound. The teen was taken to a local hospital, listed in critical but stable condition. Investigators say the incident began when the teen became upset after a rideshare ride was canceled. Okay. But police say he approached the driver in a threatening manner while armed. And in response, the driver then fired a gun, hitting the teen. So this wasn't a dispute. This was an armed threat against the rideshare driver's life. And the rideshare driver, again, acted appropriately in self-defense, according to police. The investigation does remain ongoing. Police said after consulting with the Forsyth County DA's office, police determined the shooting appeared to be an act of self-defense and no charges will be filed at this time. Rideshare driver, we don't know if he was, if he or she, frankly, we don't know anything about the rideshare driver. But they're probably looking for work now because both Uber and Lyft have policies that require drivers and passengers to be disarmed, but particularly I find it offensive in general, but I find it particularly offensive that you're telling somebody who, you know, is behind the wheel of their own vehicle, hey, even if you got a concealed carry license or you're driving in a state where a concealed carry license isn't required, you're picking up strangers, you're putting them in the back seat of your car. No, we don't allow you to protect yourself. And if you carry a gun, you can't drive for us. So this individual, I am sure, has been let go from their contract position. They're not employees of these companies, but we've seen this time and time again. I mean, I've spoken to drivers who have defended their life from carjackings, from brutal assaults. They protected themselves, but they've lost their ability to drive for Uber and Lyft in the past. So I'm sure that that is the case here. I hate these policies. I think they need to go away. It is why, whenever possible, and it's not that difficult to avoid Uber and Lyft living in rural Virginia, but whenever possible, I try not to use those services. Because I just think, again, these are policies that put drivers, and frankly passengers too, at unnecessary risk of harm. I frankly am glad to see that this driver violated that policy, was able to protect their life, even if it does mean that they're looking for a new way to make some money today. Finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time will enable to do the right thing. Some good Samaritans in Mesa, Arizona, who helped save a man's life just a couple of weeks ago. As ArizonaFamily.com reports, it was back on August 7th at the Red Mountain Baseball Complex in Mesa. Dean Terry, 52 years old, he's playing a game of baseball. He says it was a lot of fun, competitive, everything was good. And then as he's packing up at the end of the game, he started feeling a little off, and he told his friends, "Nah, I'm going to be dizzy." And he said, "I put my hand on the bleachers and then just collapsed. Had a seizure, went into cardiac arrest. There were three individuals, though, who were on hand who saved his life. Joe Cooper, Jake Tristan, Jason Wenzel, performing CPR. They use an AED device to get his heart pumping again. Cooper is a Mesa Recreation employee. He said, you know, it's pretty scary. I've never done it before. He said, I've been working for the city for 28 years. He said, I've taken classes every 3 years for CPR. He said, but it's a total different thing working on a dummy than it is working on a person. Wenzel is a former firefighter. He saw what was going on. He was actually on another field. So he ran across and helped Cooper. And then Wenzel also helped Tristan with the chest compressions. Wenzel said, you know, honestly, there were no thoughts. He said, I was just going to work on his chest. And when he started blinking, it's kind of a miracle. EMS crews said the men took good care of Terry before they arrived on the scene. Tristan said, it's still surreal that he's here. I'm just so grateful and blessed to be a part of that. Dean Terry now calls the three men his angels, and he got a chance to reunite with them again just a couple of days ago. Thank him in person. Says he hopes that he will be back on the baseball field sometime next year. He says, you know, it's just like softball, one inning at a time, one inning. And you just wait to see what the doctors say when, and that'll be another inning. So there you go, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to help a stranger in need. Joe Cooper, Jake Tristan, Jason Wenzel, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'll be joining Carl Higbee tonight on Newsmax in the 6 p.m. Eastern hour. You know, Carl's show has moved from 5 to 6 p.m., so I'll be on around 6:45 or so. Also, tomorrow, we've got our VIP Gold Live Chat coming up with Hot Air's Ed Morrissey. I was away last week, but I'll be back behind the microphone for that, too. Would love for you to be a part of it if you are a VIP Gold or Platinum member. If you're not, just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT. You can get 60% off of your VIP membership. You get all kinds of great benefits, including the ability to take part in our VIP Gold Live Chats every Wednesday afternoon. And be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the rest of the day today. We're keeping up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information that you need to know about. We'll see you back here again tomorrow for a Hump Day Wednesday edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.